Welcome to this new episode of the Teachers for Europe podcast. This is a podcast to support teachers across Europe in addressing common classroom challenges and featuring educators that can inspire others to follow in their footsteps. The podcast has its home on the European School Education Platform. This is a European Union platform for schools funded by the Erasmus Plus program. My name is Benjamin Hertz, and I'm your host for this episode. Now, our topic today is digital well-being, and this is a topic that is finally getting a lot more attention, not just in schools, but in society more generally. I think since the COVID-19 pandemic, we have seen what the UN calls a global mental health crisis, and that disproportionately affects children and young people. Now, the causes for that are very complex, but one factor that is always mentioned as a cause is the rise of screen time and the use of social media. And as a consequence, we are now seeing that in an increasing number of countries, the legal age of social media use is increased, or at least it's being discussed if it should be increased. Blanket phone bans in schools are being introduced or being discussed if they should be introduced. And a more general debate about how we can protect our children from the big tech companies that are increasingly taking over every last bit of our lives. While it is great that at a political level, young people's well-being is getting so much attention, I think no phone ban, no social media ban, and no big tech regulation will really absolve us as teachers from working with our children to teach them how to use technology in a positive and empowering way, and in a way that allows them to be digitally well. And teachers are already at the forefront of doing this work. So in this episode, I'm really excited to unpack this concept of digital well-being and explore why it deserves a central place in every European classroom. But more importantly, to discuss how we as teachers can realistically nurture this concept of digital well-being in our classrooms, in our schools, and that regardless of what we teach, regardless if that is technology, the arts, languages, or any other subject, it should be there in our classrooms. So to do this, I'm really pleased to be joined by two guests today here. We have with us here Christina Tamisalo. Christina is a sociologist at the Population Research Institute in Helsinki, working for an NGO called the Family Federation in Finland. And she is specializing in her work on social relationships and well-being and how that is impacted by digital technology. So Christina, big thanks that you're joining us here for this discussion.
I'm excited. Thank you.
Excellent. And our second guest here today is called Maroš Mitrik. Maroš is a secondary school teacher from Slovakia, where he teaches English, and he is an active eTwinner, so an active member of our community. And he has coordinated not just several eTwinning projects focusing on student well-being, but also an Erasmus Plus project focused on digital well-being. So looking forward to hear more about that, Maroš. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm really looking forward to the discussion today.
Let's jump right into it. Christina, let's start with you. Can you tell us a bit more about this concept of digital well-being? So for a teacher who's never heard about digital well-being, what does it actually mean?
I think the first things that everyone should understand, the kind of very basic level, is that digital well-being is several components. Okay. I would say that it's good to understand that the digital world, the digitalization of our lifestyles, holds both benefits and also drawbacks. So one thing which is very important is to recognize them, to recognize where the benefits are, where the drawbacks are, and find a balance between them. So to minimize the harms and navigate towards the benefits. So this is important. But then more generally, I think it's also important to see that just mere screen time itself can have an impact. So even if you find lots of benefits, you recognize a lot of benefits, you can learn there, you can communicate with your friends, there are so many things that you can do, you can recognize many benefits. But if your screen time is taking most of your day, then again, you should maybe find a balance there. So also offline benefits are important. So where you mentioned earlier there in your introduction that digital well-being should also be a part of all the subjects in school, for instance, arts, I think it's important also to recognize and emphasize that the offline world, it's in the equation. So we should also understand the benefits of the offline world and embrace those while we are thinking about the various benefits that the digital world can provide.
Excellent. Many thanks. So a lot of things I think there to unpack, to think about there. Maroš, can you tell us a bit about when you sort of first realized that this is a topic that is of interest to you and to your students, and what made you sort of address this as part of the projects that you've been working on?
I guess the first visible effects of spending too much online were seen in my career a few years ago, before the pandemic, when the video gaming started being popular among teenagers. So we noticed students sleeping in the early hours, in the early lessons in the morning, not paying attention and not providing the academic performance they used to. Of course, the pandemic, from my point of view, worsened the situation. And because the students spent so much time in front of the screens, in front of their monitors and even the phones, they got used to using digital technologies. And with the arrival of social platforms, I guess the situation became even worse. Screen time, as Christina said, is one of the consequences, or increased screen time is one of the consequences. However, maybe more important from the teacher's point of view is, and also the parents' point of view, is what and how children watch, follow, like, dislike, comment. So the content seems to be evenly important from my point of view as a teacher and a parent.
And can I ask, do you feel a bit like a lone cowboy in addressing this head on in your school? Or is there a general recognition amongst your colleagues that this is a topic that needs to be addressed in school with the students?
I personally believe it's a commonly discussed issue, and it has become a real problem over the past few years, so let's say 3-5 years. Especially with the rise, skyrocketing rise of social platforms among the teenagers. I think it's something that I would say 90% of teachers agree on. It is becoming, and it has already become, an issue that needs special attention and needs solutions.
Excellent. That's good news. Let's go into a bit how we then actually address this. But before going into that, let's look at some of the nuances, what digital well-being looks like or how it evolves across the different stages of schooling. Christina, you mentioned that sort of a first step of digital well-being is recognizing the benefits and the drawbacks of being online or being in front of a screen. Is that a good place to start when starting to work on this with six-year-olds? Or how do you see that progression of the topics that might be addressed in the context of digital well-being across the schooling age?
I think the central pillars are the same throughout education from the very early years to adults. But I think their proportions change. So for the youngest students, I take a very critical stance. I think the less is more, actually. So I think delaying the use of screens and even like delaying use of ed tech is usually more justified than introducing them very early. So I think, but the topic can still be discussed and there can be little portions here and there. But I think for children, it's so important to interact with their peers. It's so important to just engage with their physical environment as bodies and as human beings, and the devices then come later. But the topics can still be discussed, and, you know, through play and things, you can still bring these elements into their education. And then as they get older, the devices also change. So usually the younger the child, the bigger the screen. So usually it's like television first, maybe some commonly used devices, tablet computers and so on. But as children get older, usually the screens get smaller, and also then the use becomes more an individual experience. So this changes also the dynamic. It's also more difficult then to intervene in what the child is doing with their device. So the smaller the screen, the more kind of one-on-one device and individual it is. So it's harder to intervene. So in this way, I think it does change, but the pillars are still the same. We want to be very kind of aware of screen time. There's a healthy balance of physical activity and socializing with friends, and sleep is also very important. And then the screen time should be there in proportion. So, and this changes a little bit too. A little bit more can be justified for an older student, and the younger the student, then the less the better. And then recognizing the harms, of course, for children, it's very important that their internet access, for instance, doesn't expose them to bad actors. So we should also think about digitalization not only as the children's access to the internet, but the internet's access to the children. So this is, I think, a really important flip in the mindset. And this is also something that helps us understand how there's a progression through the age, through ages. So when children get older, they can be more aware and they can understand harms better and who are the people approaching them and what are the incentives of corporations and social media platforms and algorithms and so on. So their self-regulation is also stronger when they are older. So digital well-being can become more reliant on self-regulation as children grow older. But as young children, of course, they need a lot of help with that. And because of the nature and architecture of technology, I think at this point we should be quite critical and think more that children need protection from digital harms.
I thought it was interesting that you mentioned EdTech even as part of this, because students or young people increasingly spend time in front of EdTech products in school, and you would think, okay, that's of educational value. But if I understand you right, you would include that in the overall screen time and in the consideration of what digital well-being means. Is that correct? Can you maybe expand a bit on the role of EdTech here?
Right. So I think in general, we have a lot of very traditional teaching methods that we know to be valuable and useful. And sometimes it feels that EdTech is introduced in schools as like an end in itself. So I think I'm not saying that we should be decreasing it directly, but I think we should be very critical because we don't always know that we're not always aware of the fact that we are always trading off something. The teachers have a limited number of hours to spend with their students. And so if they are introducing new methods, they're usually, it's a zero-sum game. So they're trading off something else. And so I just think it's a very interesting and important discussion to have and also to be very critical and also to listen to the research to see if there are actual benefits.
Okay, interesting. I think a lot to think about there for teachers. Excellent. Maros, can you tell us a bit about how you and your colleagues are integrating digital well-being into your everyday practice and across subjects? Can you give us some concrete examples?
In the Slovak legislation, there is a law according to which students are obliged to turn off their phones and keep them in their bags. However, the real practice showed that students kept using their mobile phones secretly, of course. However, in our school, and I think it's a common practice in many other schools, as our school is a secondary school, we sometimes use the mobile phones during the lessons for some specific tasks, exercises, and so on. And we introduced mobile boxes in all the lessons. So as the student enters the classroom, they put the phone away in the mobile box. And if the teacher decides there is a task, a specific exercise, let's say, in which they will need the mobile phones, then they are allowed to use. However, it's still under the supervision of the teacher, who is in charge of control of the mobile phone usage. This is something that I'm really glad about, and I think it's supported across the schools. In primary schools, for example, children have to put their phones in the boxes early in the morning, and they get them in the afternoon when they finish lessons. In secondary schools, the more common practice is like in ours. There are mobile boxes, and the students put the phones away, and they are not allowed to use them just during the breaks. This is something that really helps, and I can see in my everyday practice that it has benefits, and it helps students concentrate, focus, pay attention, perform much better. Because even if you put the phone in the silent mode, it keeps beeping, buzzing, vibrating, and it's a disturbing element. This is something that really helps, and it has visible and clear benefits for the student.
Okay, thank you for outlining that. But in a way, that what you're talking about there are sort of the conditions for learning, that where you remove the digital element or the phone element from that. Can you also give us an example of where you proactively teach digital well-being, or a project where you proactively address digital well-being with your students, where you engage them in a discussion, for example, about what the phone does to them, what that does to their psychology, what that does to their heart rate, their physiology, etc. And that's just one example. I think there are many different avenues, right, that can be explored. Can you point us to something that you've done there, maybe in an e-twinning project, for example?
Yes, exactly. It was one of the key elements, one of the key topics of our project, Health at School. The full title of the project was Addressing Health and Wellbeing at Schools. And during the mobility in our school, we practiced teaching students how to spot and how to distinguish the effects, the health effects using mobile phones or using digital technology has on them directly and even indirectly. We had a specialist in media who, during the workshop we organized for the international students from Serbia, Italy, Greece, he had a workshop in which he explained how social media work. The students had a chance to see the backstage of the business plan social media have when the users consume what they produce. And one of the messages, one of the strongest legacies that was left after the workshop was the social media providers need your time. And I believe this is something that the participants at the Mobility of eTwinning and Erasmus Plus project understood, because the discussion continued even after the workshop, and it seemed to be extremely interesting. And the students got involved, so he spent a lot more time at our school, not just the workshop time. So I believe that the secondary school students, at least half of them, understand how social media work, how digital well-being is important. And thanks to the eTwinning project and activities we did, they understood it's a crucial element of their overall health.
That sounds really excellent. Can you tell us a bit more about the context? So what was the age range of the students, and in what subjects did you do these type of activities?
It was an activity during the physical mobility within Erasmus Plus project. And the students were about the same age. They were secondary school students from 16 to 18 years old. And it was part of the mobility program. We agreed on, all the partners and coordinators from our partner schools in the project. We also organized another workshop, but this time it was about digital well-being from this technological point of view, with our IT teacher who explained how it works and what are the effects of the media and the digital technology they can experience.
Let's talk a bit more about the teachers themselves. Now, I think many teachers will know the European Commission framework for digital competence, DigComp Edu, and this calls on teachers to model healthy digital habits. What does that look like in practice, and how honest can we as teachers actually be with our students about our own digital lives? Christina, any thoughts on that?
That's a good question. I don't work in a school, so I'm not so hands-on on this question, but the concept of modeling in general is really important when it comes to children. And from this perspective, the parents are more in a key position. But the parents are led by the schools in a way. So the culture that becomes the prevalent kind of way of life and way of doing things around digitalization is very strongly led by the community leaders, the schools. And so the parents actually need the support from the schools to be able to model healthy digital behaviors. And I've been studying this digital modeling in homes a little bit. And there are some really interesting topics there that have not been studied very much. But it's not only the parents' digital kind of habits that rub off and start to be like the children's habits. Also, we do know that parental screen time correlates with children's screen time. So the more the parents use screens, the more the children do. So we know this happens. But there's also a hidden element, which is that parents are not modeling many behaviors that they used to model. So let's say if a parent orders all of the food online, for instance, or interacts with their friends only online, there are many kinds of behaviors that the children are not seeing. They're not seeing social behavior. They're not seeing, you know, guests visiting your house and so on, and adult conversations that they do kind of subconsciously catch. They start to understand adult life from how their parents interact with their friends. And also, you know, if you never see a parent cook a meal, then obviously that behavior has not been modeled for you. So this kind of life that is inside the walls of a home is, of course, intimate, and we can't really affect that very easily with policy. But with norms that come from the schools and these kind of shared values, I think the schools are really in an important key position. I have an anecdote from when my daughter started school. The teacher, I think it was the headmistress, she wanted to address all the children, all the parents who were now new parents or like in the school community. And she said that the children are not allowed to use their personal devices on school premises. So parents, don't expect your children to answer the phone. So actually, it was to the parents. It was not only that we're going to ban your children from doing this and that, but it was to the parents. You know, this is our culture. This is how we want our children to grow. You need to be a part of this. So I think the school is in a really important position in leading in this role modeling. It's like a chain, and it starts from the schools, and it also affects the homes.
Excellent. And I'm thinking, actually, it should also be a rule for the parents not to use their devices as soon as they enter the school grounds, because you also see that often, that when they sit in a parents' meeting or so, and they're on their devices. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Maros, can you maybe respond to that? I think there's these two aspects here. One is, of course, the modeling by the teachers, to what extent that is possible. And the other thing is the work with the parents. How do you work with parents, or what would you advise other teachers to do there?
As for modeling, I think the teachers, of course, are the people who the students see, and they keep an eye on them. And the teachers should show a certain level of engagement and sharing their online behavior or digital behavior, let's say. I think they, in my case, it's also something that I feel I should do and share with the students, because this is how you get them engaged. You do not build a wall between you and the students if you show that you use, and you admit it, of course, that you also use the digital devices. You are also active online on social platforms. But what we do need to show them as, let's say, role models, because in a way, teachers are some kind of role models for students. What they can do is to admit that they are people as well, with their strengths and weaknesses, and they should get engaged in the same level in the issues of, let's say, addiction to mobile devices or social platforms or digital screen time. The teachers should be authentic, and they should not pose in a position where they just produce the ban and do not take part. Inclusion, being included, involved in these activities, provide, in my opinion, the best example that the students might follow, and many of them do.
Excellent. And can you tell us a bit more about how you work with parents? Do you feel that parents are sort of receptive to addressing this as a topic and are supportive of what you are trying to do in the classroom and school?
The parents also play an important role. I would say even more important, because if the school applies strict regulations as for using digital devices at school, and the child comes home and the parents are benevolent or indifferent, then of course the whole effect disappears. In my practice, of course, when I need to contact and address parents, we use the online communication. From time to time, of course, there is a need to meet physically, but most of the time we use online conversations, online devices. However, one more point that is important to say, parents are mostly supportive, and they are fully aware and welcoming in terms of school applying some rules, regulations, or even restrictions. So I would say schools get enough support from the parent side when it comes to issues connected with digital well-being.
Let's stay a bit with this idea of working with parents and more generally a whole school approach to addressing digital well-being. We've talked about sort of these mechanisms, Marsh, that you were like phone hotels or phone boxes or whatever they're called, and the response of parents and working with parents. Christina, are you aware of any other strategies that a school leader at a whole school level can introduce, and that some of the listeners to this podcast, be they teachers or school leaders themselves, could bring into their school community, into the conversation to address this?
Well, I have another example. This is not research-based, but I thought it was interesting how the restrictions in school, which were introduced in Helsinki or in Finland nationally, they were introduced a year ago in August. The school needed to take a clear approach. First of all, they needed to ban personal phone use during the lessons. But then in addition, they needed to come up with like a school policy of what schools actually do with the devices, whether they want to use boxes or whether they could just need the students to keep them out of sight, or like what the actual policy will be. So the schools had to all communicate their approach to all the parents. And one thing that I found really interesting was this case that the phones in the school where my daughter goes, they can keep their devices, but they need to keep them out of sight. So they're not using them during the school day at any point during the school day. But there were some assignments that they needed to do where they would use their own phones if they had one. And if they didn't have their own personal device, the school would then provide some common use device. And I thought it was interesting that they still promote or want to make visible that a 7 or 8 or 9 year old has a phone of their own, because I think that the whole point of the restrictions and the nationwide law was that we want to start delaying the phone ownership. And if the phones are very visible in school, like the children are doing an assignment in class, and they take out their own phones, it's still very visible who has a device and who doesn't, and who needs to go to the common box to get like a common tablet. I think it does actually put children in like a hierarchy, and children are always very interested in like who has their own phone and like so on. But the less visible they are, I think that would be better, because that would promote delaying phone ownership. So this was like a case, and we discussed this in the school, and my personal opinion is that I think it would be better if the digital education, and if devices are used, that they would always be the school devices, that children would never have to use their own phones.
And Marosh, does that, I mean, correspond with also your thoughts on this? I mean, is there anything that at whole school level you feel needs to be done to improve the digital well-being of students that currently isn't being done at your school?
I would say the schools, based on the project experience, many families feel uncertain about rapidly changing technologies and online cultures. And the role of school in this case should be rather focusing on partnership rather than blame or involving parents in the school policy regarding the digital devices or using digital devices and digital well-being. I would advise the school to create some kind of common digital policy that could be communicated to the parents during the whole school meetings, because they are held twice a year when parents of all students come to school, the whole school parent-teacher association meeting. And there is a space for communicating the policy or the strategy of the school towards the parents, so that parents can understand and accept the policy more easily and more effectively. And this way, there would be this partnership between the school leadership and the parents stronger. I think it would make the parents more aware of the problems. There are issues we talk about. I think this would help the parents to fight or manage the use of digital devices, and also, I would say, control of what their kids do and how they use their devices.
And it's probably also a good opportunity to, in a way, help parents understand, or help the community understand, not just, this isn't just about phones, right? About all these other aspects that are related. Because we've talked a lot about phone bans, but I mean, there's a lot of other aspects that probably many people aren't aware of. Increasingly, there is an awareness about the detriments that come with social media use, sharing data, et cetera. But there are probably still big gaps out there. And I think where a school is a good place to learn in the community. That's a big task for teachers and for schools, of course. But given that this has such a big impact on our children, I think it's the right place to do that. Before closing, can we briefly talk still a bit about maybe a more positive outlook on the use of technology and tools, and how we as teachers can help students move from being sort of passive consumers of digital content or digital technology to really becoming active, reflective, and responsible digital citizens? Because if you feel empowered to use technology in a positive way that doesn't make you feel bad, then that is surely also a part of digital well-being. Christina, any thoughts on that?
Yes, I have some thoughts. I don't know whether this is the positive that you were expecting, but so I think all that you said is exactly what we should be aiming at and really important goals. But at the same time, we need to recognize the reality that the big technology industry is controlling a lot of our time use, a lot of the time use of children and youth. And also, they, as they are growing, the big tech companies are able to shape their values, shape their consuming habits, shape their long-term friendships even. So I think it's really important to recognize that where we stand now is not very close to those ideals that we would want to reach. And we do need to recognize that screen time right now is mainly about entertainment and the use of these major platforms that are now like taking up most of the screen time. It used to look a little bit better. I had a study on my table not that long ago, and it was from pre-COVID times. And it looked like young people were actually quite creative and quite active. So some of their screen time would actually be this kind of active engagement. But from that time, COVID and after COVID, it has been just a steady increase in screen time without increasing those positive aspects, the positive active engagement that we hope to reinforce. So I think the reality is really important here, and we should really like aim to first address this big issue that the growing screen time where we stand now is mostly about this kind of detrimental use that we do not wish to increase. So I don't know. That was really not very positive, but I do agree with you. Like, I do agree with you that the digital tools are a major possibility to increase democracy and participation. But at the same time, the architecture of social media platforms, for example, they do support polarization more than discussion and democracy. So the reality, I think, is quite, I would say, dark right now. Yeah. But I do agree with you. So I don't want to say that they're not important issues. They are.
Okay. Yes. Fair enough. No, I think that's an important point. Maurice, do you agree with that? Any other thoughts on this?
Yes, I agree. However, I still see the power of collaborative platforms like eTwinning and Erasmus, because from my practice, I could see how digital devices are used and digital well-being was promoted in our project, had a huge positive effect on the students. It was really hard to believe, but when students started to create rather than consume the content, it made them a lot more engaged and a lot more aware of all the benefits and drawbacks. I see platforms like eTwinning and the projects that bring young people together and the projects with topics that focus on this part, because this is going to be one of the most important issues in education. The importance of these platforms and projects is really huge. If I noticed well, some time ago I read that Sweden is going to switch digital tools to exercise books and pens, which indicates a huge change and understanding of how serious the problem is. And the more we talk about it, the better, of course, the more people understand how it works and how the effects of digital life influences our life, our personal life, the more benefits children can have. When you compare your childhood, your teenage years, and the teenage years of young people today, there is a big difference, of course. However, it seems like too much screen time, and I mean not only the mobile phones, but also the laptop monitors, televisions, and all these digital devices we use. Spending too much time, even though the social media are called social, they become antisocial. You frequently see a group of young people sitting together, however, each of them looking at their own screen and not interacting. And I am again in another two e-twinning projects just because of this. It distracts young people from spending their time when they could develop, when they could improve their skills, their knowledge, their enjoy their younger years of their life. They do something that makes sense even to them. And just one small thing. I'm a class teacher, and this last week my class finished their studies. And when we had like a discussion, a conversation, a free conversation after the ceremony, when they received their school reports and all that, they told me that Erasmus Project put the class together. They became real friends. And thanks to their contacts, they have planned summer holidays with the previous partners or students from the previous partners in projects. This is a bright example how platforms and digital tools can help and have some benefits. Yeah,
thank you for those examples. I think, you know, really lovely to hear those positive uses of the e-twinning platform and the positive impact that can have with the e-twinning community, but also the Erasmus Plus projects. And that's exactly what it is we're aiming for, right, in providing these tools and platforms to the teaching community. So thank you for flagging those up. I think it's, in a way, a nice way to close. But before we do that, I do want to give each of you the opportunity to very briefly say one thing to our listeners. If they want to begin nurturing digital well-being with their students, what is it that they should do? Any subject, any level, what should they do next week if they want to go ahead with this? Christine, let's start with you.
Well, okay. My choice of word is embodied experiences. So I want to somehow plant this word into everyone who wants to think about digital well-being, is that we have embodied experiences, and those can then be expanded and brought on a different level with digital tools. But if it's just digital, then it's very thin. It's a very digital interaction is kind of a very low investment. It's not embodied, so you don't have to move very much. You're not experiencing very much. It's very like a very small little thing to click something or to go or navigate somewhere. So it's very not embodied. It's very low investment. But when there's something behind what you're doing on digital platforms, when there's something embodied, some experience behind it that then is brought onto this digital platform or some kind of tool to then be expanded, I think that's great.
Okay, so the message is, next week, if you're a teacher and you have something that you're only doing digitally, add the embodied experience to it.
Yeah, I think always the starting point should be the embodied experience. So there's something behind, there's like, if it's a small child, there's maybe something that they played together, there was something that they did together, there was some embodied experience, and then there can be a digital level and the children kind of understand, okay, we can kind of expand from what we already experienced, and then it attaches to something. The digital experience attaches to an embodied experience. So I think this is a really sweet spot where we can nurture digital well-being.
Excellent. Very clear message. Thank you, Christina. Maros?
Yes, I would say engage the parents. Do something that engages the parents in online activities. And for teachers, what the teachers could do. Let's say mathematics. Students can use, for example, statistics. They can create some graphs. they can analyze their screen time, draw a graph, calculate averages in languages. Of course, the use is very flexible. We can analyze, and we did some weeks ago during one lesson, we analyzed the language, especially the persuasive language used in short videos and app interfaces, and we discussed the emotional subtexts. In science and biology, students can explore the physiological effects. So I would say engage the teachers and parents as well, so that the view of digital well-being is not a question of theoretical knowledge or theoretical lecture given at school, and the school ticks, okay, we have done this, there is nothing else. It is important to keep talking about it, to keep informing not just students, but also the parents and wider community about the issues we have to face at school, because the children spend a lot of their time at school. And of course, the school has a major effect on shaping their character, shaping their personality, shaping their traits, gaining knowledge, and so on. That is why I feel school is one of the most important elements in the life of young people. And the schools should use the opportunity to do something to avoid, let's say, the negative trends, or to avoid deteriorating of the well-being in general. So any teacher in any lesson, any subject, I would say, has a chance and space to include digital screen time or whatever it is in the lesson, and create some content that can be shared with the parents.
Thank you, Maros. I think every teacher has a space, opportunity, and also a responsibility to address it in their classrooms. And thank you for also outlining those very concrete ideas that the teachers listening here to this podcast, be they math teachers, language teachers, science teachers, can pick up now moving forward. Many thanks for a very interesting conversation. I think we've touched many different areas, ranging from what is digital well-being to how we can address it, what it means for EdTech, what it means for working with parents, what it means for the whole school community. I think it's a very complex issue, but the urgency is very, very clear. That came out of the conversation, I think, very clearly. Let's hope it's been useful for our listeners, especially. Let's take those forward, those very concrete ideas, when you go into your classroom tomorrow or next week. Make sure to also keep an eye out for a lot of resources on the European School Education Platform and in eTwinning. We have quite a few courses. We have quite a few resources, teaching materials focusing on this topic. So make sure to have a browse there. And with that, I want to say another big thank you to both Christina and Maros for joining us here. And look forward to seeing you on another episode in the future.